This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. When Whole Foods opened in Midtown Detroit, there was loud applause that a major grocer would serve the city. And then there were a lot of questions. Why Whole Foods? I mean, could the vast majority of Detroit even afford the upscale grocer? The management of Whole Foods indicated it would work to keep prices lower than its other stores, affordable, and noted that low-income people deserved a source of healthier food choices, too. It shouldn't be limited as an option for only the middle class or the rich. But execution of those goals has been a mixed bag of results. Tracy McMillan wrote a piece for Slate.com entitled, "Can Whole Foods Change the Way Poor People Eat?" And she joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
As I read your article, it seemed as though there were a lot of disconnects, a disconnect between why Whole Foods was encouraged to come to Detroit and its stated goals for being in Detroit, a disconnect between the city's poor, about one-third of Detroit is at or below the poverty line, and the value that Whole Foods place on its products. And then there's a disconnect between Whole Foods and the idea that all that really needs to be done is to persuade the residents of Detroit they need to change the way they eat. So let's start with that first one. Why Whole Foods came to Detroit?
I think the reason Whole Foods came to Detroit actually ties into several different themes, right? First of all, Whole Foods is looking to expand its store base, nearly tripling up to 1,200 stores by 2020. So they've got to expand past sort of the upper income niche market that it's known for serving. I think Walter Robb, the co-CEO who championed the store internally at Whole Foods, I think he is sincere in having a social conscience and wanting to figure out ways to address, you know, his concerns around social equity at the same time, right? Whole Foods is a business, and they saw this not just as a way to go in and open a store, not just even as a way to do market research for expanding other stores, but also as a very savvy way to get a lot of press. You know, this store got a lot of national media attention when it opened, and Whole Foods isn't stupid, right? Like, they understand that their reputation as an upper-income grocer conflicts with people's understanding of Detroit, and that that was going to be sort of catnip for media, and I think that that actually did happen, right? Like, you actually got Kai Rizdahl from Marketplace to come all the way out from L.A. just to attend the opening. That doesn't happen by accident, right? That's smart marketing.
So the impression was that many of the people who are residents of Detroit, except for, you know, people who might work in the Midtown area or in those, you know, more wealthy enclaves in Detroit, would shop at Whole Foods. Who actually ended up shopping at Whole Foods in Midtown?
Overall, the same people that shop at Whole Foods in the suburbs are the folks who are shopping at the Detroit store, which are upper income niche customers, definitely trickling down into the middle class. I think that you do see that at the Whole Foods in Detroit. And certainly, you know, I have seen folks in security guard uniforms and things like that in the store. The Whole Foods in Detroit is one of the only places to sort of stop in and get quick, reasonably healthy food. So it's certainly the lack of competition in the market helps Whole Foods. So a lot of folks go there, but the balance, right, of customers at Whole Foods is still upper middle class folks, as far as I could tell. You know, it's hard to get actual numbers on the socioeconomic demographics of who's going to a store, right? You'd have to get sort of internal research from a company if they're tracking it that closely. The best that I could sort of do was ask Whole Foods about how many customers they were seeing from SNAP, right, on food stamps. And while Whole Foods was telling me, like, you know, we're seeing a lot more than at our other stores, like 5-6 times as much, you know, I had a source who knows the market pretty well and said, well, that might be true, but Whole Foods typically is seeing 1-2% of its sales from SNAP. So if we're talking 10-12% of their sales from SNAP, that's great. That's more than they get elsewhere. They're operating in a city where 38% of the residents are on SNAP. So that's a really big difference.
Right. Whole Foods likes to talk about the value of its products versus the price, but when you're on a tight budget, price really matters. How do residents respond to Whole Foods' suggestion that price is not the priority, healthy food choices are?
Well, most customers of any income class care about health, right? I think that that's really obvious from the reporting that I've done. What's interesting about what Whole Foods is doing is they're trying to redefine health to basically require you to shop at their store, right? So all the discussion around sustainable, around local, around GMO-free, all of these things, you know, they're sort of conflating all of that with a healthy diet and suggesting that the kind of food that's being sold at King Cole, which is a grocer in the North End, or, you know, any other store, that's actually not really healthy. So I think all shoppers across all income levels are interested, for the most part, in eating healthy. What Whole Foods is really trying to convince folks is that healthy means shopping at Whole Foods.
Right. Eggs are eggs. I mean, it might be nice that Whole Foods sells eggs that are from chickens who aren't held in cages, but for your health, an egg is an egg, right?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, the sort of proven difference in nutritional value between organic and non-organic and cage-free and non-cage-free, all that stuff, it's really, really tiny, right? Most Americans, the problem is that we're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. You can certainly get that at any store. It doesn't have to be Whole Foods.
Now, Whole Foods doesn't like to compare its prices for its products with other grocers because it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But you did some comp shopping of your own. What did you find?
Yeah, so what I found is that if you were to switch from King Cole, which is a grocery store in the North End, sort of stable, long-term operating grocery store in Detroit, and then switch to Whole Foods, going for the cheapest item in each category, you would see your grocery bill go up by about, I think it was 27%. That's less than it would go up if you went to a Whole Foods in the suburbs. I think the increase there was more around 40%, right? So the Detroit Whole Foods is comparatively cheaper than the suburban stores. And what was really interesting to me is that, you know, Whole Foods will trot out its items that it says are competitive, that are competitively priced. And certainly they do a great job with loss leading. You know, their bananas are as cheap as anywhere else in the city, spaghetti sauce, pasta sauce, things like that. But if you sit down and you sort of look at what's cheap and what's not at Whole Foods, what you'll find is that it's the processed food in the grocery aisles that's usually pretty close in price, maybe within 5-10% of a normal grocery store. Once you start looking at the stuff like fruits and vegetables and meat and dairy and, you know, sort of fresh food, that's where Whole Foods really loses its competitive edge in pricing, which, you know, Whole Foods will tell you that's because it's organic or it's produced in all these ways. But I think it was the produce was 50% more expensive as an average, and the meat was usually close to twice as expensive at Whole Foods as at another grocery store.
Now, you presented your findings to Whole Foods management. What was the reaction?
Last January, I was having a conversation with Whole Foods co-CEO Walter Robb, and I said, hey, you know, this is great what you guys are doing, but we got to talk about prices here. And, you know, you guys are great on organic prices, but if you're going to do all your grocery shopping at Whole Foods, it's definitely more expensive. And, you know, Rob's response was, well, that's not true. We're competitive on like-to-like items. And Whole Foods isn't really willing to engage with a discussion of price beyond that talking point. They sort of talk about the value of what they're doing. They will tell you that, you know, they are competitive on a like-to-like item, but that's really as far as they're going to go. They're not going to engage with the fact that, you know, not everybody is going to be buying organic. And it's very interesting, and the more that I spent time talking with Whole Foods, you know, this piece took about 18 months. You know, the sort of more I could understand the way that their PR was working. And they have this really intelligent and savvy response that, you know, they'll sort of say, oh, we're coming to Detroit, we're going to serve all of Detroit, and we're going to have lower prices. And you say, oh, that's great, you have lower prices. They're like, yes, and it's great value. And you say, great. And then you say, oh, but wait, these prices aren't that much cheaper. And then they say, oh, but it's not our job to tell poor people how to shop, is it, or what their values are. And it, you know, the first few times I had this discussion with Whole Foods, for me, it was really shocking sort of how immediately embarrassed I felt, because I felt, oh my gosh, I'm being racist and classist because I thought poor people wouldn't want to eat the nice food at Whole Foods. Right. And that's actually not what I was asking. Right. I was asking how affordable is it?
Right. One of those disconnects I was talking about. You know, one of the things that really alarmed me was the Whole Foods co-CEO, Walter Robb, told you that they would stop cooperating if it didn't like the direction of your reporting. I mean, that's an interesting reproach to any reporter. What kind of cooperation did you get as you kept gathering information?
Yeah, probably about the first 8 to 10 months, it went really well. It was a very slow-formed piece. So, you know, it wasn't a quick turnaround news story. And so long as I kept sort of just talking along the talking points, it went fine. And, you know, this interaction I had with Rob really surprised me. I had had sort of a professional rapport with Rob before I began the story. And he'd struck me as a fairly direct and sort of honest person. And then, you know, I was sort of shocked when on the opening day of the Whole Foods store, he sat me down and he said, oh, well, I just want to let you know, if we don't like what you're doing, we're going to stop cooperating. So up until we got to the point where I was asking about prices, they were really cooperative. You know, I spoke to some top leadership besides Rob. I, you know, was allowed to walk around the store without a PR person, which was great. But as soon as I said, oh, well, actually, I wrote down prices comparing you guys to another grocer, that's when they decided they didn't want to talk to me anymore.
I found it interesting that Whole Foods hired a nutritionist to explain how and why Detroit residents should change their diet. How does that work, and what kind of reaction have residents had to that advice?
Well, I think the nutritionist at Whole Foods, Akul Wilbright, is a really fascinating character, and I think she's doing some really interesting work in Detroit. Akua, for me, really proved the fact that, you know, people of all walks of life care about their health and nutrition. You know, I write in the piece about going to a church on a summer night in Detroit, it's a Catholic church, but largely a black parish, and I go into this meeting of 60 or 70 people who've all come out to hear her talk. And what really sort of struck me is that, you know, when we finished the lecture, they were serving refreshments and it was vegan ice cream and green smoothies and all this stuff that the parishioners themselves had made. You know, the stuff that Akua is talking about in terms of eating healthfully and, you know, more whole foods and all of that stuff, like, there's a lot of interest in and traction with that idea in low-income communities and in communities of color. You know, in Detroit, it's really easy to forget that just because it's a poor city that's mostly black, that, you know, there are still quite a lot of black people in Detroit who are not poor. There is a middle class there that crosses race lines. People are really receptive to Akua, and particularly because she can speak in not just the vernacular of healthy eating, but also, you know, the black church, right? She does a really good job of that. So I think it's really interesting in Detroit to sort of see how people respond to her. Mostly folks like her. It's just that once people start crunching the numbers about what their grocery bill is going to be if they shop entirely at Whole Foods, they don't go there as frequently.
You made the statement that the problem might not be Whole Foods. The problem is really poverty. So tell me what you mean by that. Explain that.
Well, there's a lot of discussion right now in the U.S. around using food access in supermarkets as a way to combat obesity and sort of the dietary gap that exists right now between the rich and the poor in this country, which has been widening. There are a lot of initiatives around the country around healthy food initiatives and getting more supermarkets into neighborhoods. The impetus for that is always, well, access to food matters, so you can eat a healthy diet and that's going to fix the way that people eat, and that's going to lead to better health outcomes. And what I saw in spending these 18 months in Detroit was that the reason that people are eating crappy diets usually isn't because there isn't a supermarket. It's because they don't have enough money. And I wanted to make sure that that point was clear. And I also wanted to make it clear, you know, Whole Foods is doing, I think, a lot of interesting things as a grocer. It's certainly not that retailer's fault that they haven't fixed obesity in Detroit. And I wanted to make sure, you know, that there was an understanding for readers, right, that this wasn't a takedown of Whole Foods as much as it was going to be a thoughtful look at what does it mean when you say you're going to use a grocery store to solve poverty or to solve obesity.
Now, we talked about that assumption that lower income residents of Detroit, who Whole Foods said it would serve, could not afford food from the grocer, which is sometimes derisively called the whole paycheck. So was that assumption correct? Has that proven to be the case since the store has been in business in the city? And how has its approach to its customers evolved over that time?
Yeah, so there's no great way to know the income level of folks who are at the store. In looking at how many folks are going there with food stamps, right, it's probably, my estimate would be 10 to 12% of their customers are using food stamps. And, you know, that's in a city where 38% of residents are on food stamps. So they're certainly not reaching a cross-section of the city. Over time, what was interesting to me was that as I talked with store management, they said, oh, well, the store is just succeeding. It's doing really great. And we've really been expanding our product mix. And everything they told me they were doing pointed to higher income.
They had a cap on meats. They had a cap on certain other products with this idea of being affordable to residents in Detroit.
I don't think that they've raised the bottom price up too much. Like, I did notice some things like, you know, applesauce cups went from $2.99 up to $3.19 and things like that. Some of those prices have nudged back up. But the bigger thing is that, you know, when Whole Foods went into Detroit, what it did was it stopped carrying the most expensive items because they didn't want people to come in and get sticker shock. And as the store evolved and they were getting more and more requests from customers saying, like, we would like more expensive items, they started stocking them. So the top seller in bakery was a $6 cupcake. The most expensive bottle of wine is now a $48 bottle of champagne, things like that. Whole Foods in Detroit is certainly catering more to upper income folks or folks looking for a treat than it is as a basic grocery store.
Well, that was the demand. Whole Foods is known for really reaching out to the community when it was in the hiring process. It went to several neighborhood groups to help them find new hires. It's been active in the city in other ways. Can it be argued that the grocer didn't just plop its store in the middle of the city and that was that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Whole Foods does really specific and impressive community outreach whenever it opens a store. And they did that even more so in Detroit. I believe when they opened, they had 70% of their hires were directly from Detroit. I don't know where that number now sits, but they've created jobs. It's a very lively hub in the city. You know, I think that there are a lot of benefits to having that store there. The question I was asking with this piece was, you know, well, who are you actually serving and what are you actually accomplishing? I think what they've accomplished is opening a successful, sort of more upscale type grocer than the city had before. But whether that's going to actually translate into something that matters for most Detroiters, right, I think that's a very different question.
Now, Detroit is not the only place where they've placed these stores in mixed to low-income neighborhoods around the country. What are the lessons the company is learning from these experiments?
How do you market to a mixed-income community, and can you do that successfully, and how mixed can it be? Detroit is interesting, right, because it's got such a reputation of being only poor people that all Whole Foods really had to do was show up and serve the middle, upper-middle class, and people were shocked because the sort of narrative of Detroit was that there's nobody there, right? And there actually are a good number of people living there. It's still the 13th largest, I think, city in the U.S., with that, right, in Detroit, Whole Foods was learning how do you market to communities of color really directly? What kinds of price points work in a lower income city versus an upper income enclave somewhere? How much business can we attract from our other stores in the suburbs to come down if it's cheaper here? And sort of trying to figure out how do you make all of that calculus work out so that you have a productive store? They've since opened a store in Mid-City in New Orleans. That's a very mixed income area, which is very interesting. But what I've heard from folks down there is that, you know, they're a great grocer, but the price points just really aren't there, especially when you're trying to do healthy eating education in lower income communities where the presumption tends to be that healthy food is too expensive and so why bother? And so if you have Whole Foods being the primary example of where to go grocery shopping, that doesn't dispel that myth. But Whole Foods is also opening a store in Englewood in Chicago, which is a much rougher location than where Detroit's store is. So I think that's going to be very interesting watching going forward.
Tracy McMillan wrote a piece called Can Whole Foods Change the Way Poor People Eat for Slate.com. Well worth the read. You should look it up and find it. Thanks very much, Tracy.
Thank you so much.